Blog Talk Radio.
We are the UR Tennis Network. Our mission is to be the voice of tennis. We enlist a team of passionate enthusiasts to promote our sport. We strive to bring interesting perspectives on the many spins of tennis. Our goal is to provide the learners of our sport with current news and information from many angles. We seek active participation from communities interested in tennis, but tennis is not interested in them. We are expanding our outreach. Tennis is a true lifetime sport that needs to be talked about, and the UR Tennis Network pledges to pursue this idea relentlessly.
Good afternoon, high school tennis fans. Welcome to the UR Ten Network, where you'll find all your tennis news. This is your host, Coach Denise, bringing you the FHS TCA perspective on high school tennis. Hopefully you're enjoying Florida as much as I am. As you know, those of you listening to the broadcast last week, we did it from Hilton Head. Hilton Head is one of our many favorite places, but the PTI was great. The USTA High Performance Continuing Education was great, but it was cold. So nice to be back in Florida. Hopefully you're also listening to the other broadcasts on the UR10 Network. As you know, this network is all about tennis. This is what the network is about. And on the network on Wednesdays, you will find Jason Haynes there bringing you the American College Experience. He is also the founder of the UR10 Network, and he does a great job. As you know, we're looking to get many of the high school players that can go to the next level into college, so it's nice to be able to hear him interviewing a lot of those colleges. We always have a college coach on once a month, but he has one on every single week. Jason Weber, Coach Weber, We Coach Tennis, comes to you from California. Has an outstanding show there. And, of course, Lisa Stone, the parent in Aces, she has tennis from 10 and under going right up to college. And yesterday, if you missed Coach Creasy and his American tennis broadcast, you missed a heck of a show. But he has a heck of a show every week. And I really suggest to you that looking at it, if you don't want to get involved, but he gets into some deep conversation sometime, whenever you see instructional series on there, make sure you tune in. You don't want to miss it. He's just a great, great author, a legend in college coaching, and he does an outstanding job on the radio show. So I strongly suggest when you have the time, go in. Remember, just like our show, you don't have to tune in at that time in order to listen to the broadcast. You could choose at your own convenience to go in and listen to the broadcast. I will also remind you that, you know, we finished with our awards in December. Wilson was very prominent in that, and Wilson will also be prominent in our next event. We are now starting the high school tennis season the week after the FHSAA state championships are over. We will be in Winter Park, Florida, and we will have our fifth annual All-Star Tournament. So please send your seniors to that. Nominate them, even if they're not chosen to go to with the park and playing the tournament, recognize them. Let's send them out with the a nice certificate that we will give them from the FHSTCA. It only costs $25 to nominate a senior. We've had one school in Florida that has never had a player participate in the actual event, but for the last 4 years, every senior on that high school, the school has nominated for the tournament. So recognize the high school seniors. Let's send them out there. Wilson is doing their part. They'll be providing goodie bags for the all the players and coaches, and we will naturally be using the Wilson tennis ball at the event. All those goodies will be in a backpack that Dean Street Insurance will be providing. Dean Street Insurance has been a great supporter of our organization, and again, they will be at the All-Star Tournament and looking to send our high school seniors off to college with some fine memories. If you don't have a Dean Street in your community, go to www.deanstreetinsurance and see if they can help you. And, of course, we always have the nicest-looking players and coaches each year, and I'm sure this year is going to be no different because the FHSTCA Clothier, which is Team Connection, will be supplying the shirts for the coaches and the players again this year. So I'm sure they're going to look good. Excuse me. And, of course, we want to thank Florida Tennis Magazine and for their support of the event every year. And speaking, I spoke earlier about Coach Chuck Reese. If you've missed some of his shows, you don't want to miss the opinion page of this issue of Florida Tennis Magazine. Coach Creasy has written a very interesting opinion in there. I'm sure it's not going to please everybody, but it should be digested and looked at, and you decide what you agree with him and what you don't agree with him. I think I see our guest on today. I feel very blessed. Let me make sure he is on.
Hi, John.
Scott, are you there?
I am there. How are you?
I am blessed. How are you? Before I introduce you and let you, I'm going to let you introduce yourself, but I do feel I should tell people a few things. Scott Williams, we are blessed to have him as a member of our board of directors. As you know, we are getting more interest in the country now in our certification program, what we've done in cooperation with Human Kinetics. And part of our agreement with Human Kinetics is any other state high school tennis organization that wants to adopt this, they can, and they just change the name rather than the FHSTCA tennis team coach certification. It'll be whatever that state is. And speaking of Human Kinetics, part of our point system that we give points for our coaches is one of the books that Scott Williams has written, and Human Kinetics is published, and it is still available with them, and you will be able to go in and get the book. It's the Serious Tennis and Skills and Drills by Human Kinetics. We give a point for that. We have a point system that I won't go into right now, but it's a book that he's written that is an important book, and that's why we have it on the reading list and for our coaches. If you're not familiar with Scott's tennis, let me tell you a little bit about him. He's an ATP Tour champion coach. I should say champion coach, a tour coach. He's a USTA Florida Commission coach, a USTA High Performance coach, a USPTA Level 1 coach, a PSIA Level 2 coach. And, of course, he is, he's been past USPTA Florida High School Coach of the Year. We're proud to have him as a member of our board of directors. And he is also the founder of the Tennis Ministries of Florida, and is very active with the Fellowship of Christian Athletes. Matter of fact, I'm not positive, so I'll let him tell you if I think we have a division in Florida, I mean, not the Florida, but Fellowship of Christian Athletes Tennis. So, Scott, can you come in and fill in the pieces that I missed?
Well, goodness, there were a whole lot of letters there in that introduction. But thank you so much, John, for having me back on the show. And it's always a great honor and privilege to be, speaking with you and, discussing ideas that help not only high school coaches, but coaches of all levels that listen to this show. As I know, you have a great college following, and I know there are a number of professional coaches out there, too, that are now starting to tune in and, improve their coaching abilities through your show. So thank you again for all your hard work that you do for tennis.
Well, thank you for being part of it. I've told many times before that weekly that you are a major part of putting this program together. And to me, the fascinating thing is that there are the similarities between coaching at different levels and with the ATP. Sometimes I get frustrated when I hear people say, well, I'm just an ATP coach, or I'm just a WTA coach, or I'm just a high-performance coach. I don't know how you get to that without being a good coach.
Well, yes, and you know what I find amazing is, and I think all the listeners perhaps have experienced, at least I hope they have, is sometimes we see ourselves as just being a tennis coach at the levels you were expressing, or, you know, at all levels. And it's not until we get that letter or maybe that contact on Facebook or Instagram where a student who maybe was on the court with you just for privates or within some type of group setting, and they write to you and they say, hey, coach, do you remember when you told me this? Well, it really changed my life. And, you know, those are some of the most rewarding moments, I think, as coaches we can experience. And that's what I find so amazing about the game is from the entry level all the way through the top professionals, we have a platform to make a difference in our students' lives. And that's a wonderful thing.
It sure is. And I think I have a bias like most people do, but I think sports in general and tennis in particular can be a platform, not just in our students' life, but to get us on track again and being who America is and why it was the greatest country for 200 years. I recently went and saw a movie said I wasn't going to see because I had a misconception of what it was going to be. And sometimes I think people have a misconception of coaching, and until they get in and study it, and I plead guilty. When the movie 13 Hours came out, I thought it was going to be a political movie. I thought it was going to be blasting one particular party or person. And, I said, I'm getting tired of it seems like a longer than normal political session, and I think I'm going to miss it. And I had someone tell me, John, you would appreciate this movie, not only as an ex-Marine, but also as somebody that's into life and into loving and into sharing. He said, this is a movie you have to see. So I did go see the movie, and I did hear a few people were disappointed. Why didn't they do this? Why didn't they do that? I think most of the people that came out realized that there were some really good lessons there, and breaking down those lessons and being fascinated with history, I actually wrote down and took some notes after I came home, which I thought, you know, maybe tennis could have helped some. I'd like to just go over those half a dozen things. One is, you know, you must understand strengths and weaknesses as an individual, and as a coach, you better honestly understand your player's strengths and weaknesses. The player should always have a plan, and many times that plan isn't good enough, so you better have an alternative plan. And three, you know, time is what tennis is all about. When you break down the game of tennis, it's a game of time. And time often pertains to how businesses and governments, you know, set up and do things, and is there time. The other thing that was obvious to me and from the movie was fear is a factor there. The fear was important. And guess what? In tennis, fear is affects a tennis player's decision making sometimes, and even their stroke lessons there. So I think some of the lessons that I got from that movie, being that I'm thinking more of tennis lately than other items, they seem to fill into tennis. Those four or five items I mentioned, are they part of tennis, Scott?
Absolutely. Absolutely. You know, as coaches, we have to go through and we have to very carefully analyze both with a preseason questionnaire, a midseason questionnaire, and a postseason questionnaire, what our players feel are their strengths and weaknesses to start off with. And that all falls into part of your coaching plan. Then we have to realistically look at how much time do we need each of the three levels of players to spend with us on the team or around the team. Because to ask all three different levels, and I'm referring to the recreational, the student athletes, and the players that have professional or high Division I aspirations, to ask them to do all the same thing within the same plan is unfair. And then finally, fear generally is fear of the unknown. And, you know, we are told that we're not meant to be fearful, right? But we're meant to have a spirit of love, power, and self-discipline. And I love the fact, and that comes from the book of 2 Timothy 1, verse 7, I love the fact that the last part is self-discipline. So through self-discipline, we can overcome fear. But we have to attack it. We have to face our fear and go to it anyway, and then go through it.
Excellent points, excellent points. And I think that is one of the basic things that at our workshop that you did when you were presenting the, how to handle the different pathways in practice and in scheduling. And it's part of what I think the tennis team coaching is about. And a team, to me, is about family. And family is about love and about sitting there and being there for them. And sometimes about you know, expressing disappointment when something happens. But it all boils down to love. And if you have to love yourself, and I think you shouldn't be afraid to express the love to others.
That's correct. I love that. I do. That's funny. I'd even choose that word because it's that's right. It's all about creating a family environment with you and your players and the parents, if you can. And, of course, we know that there are sometimes disruptors to that. But it is all about love, and it's love for getting better. It's love for learning the game. It's love for competing. It's love for working hard. So there's a lot of aspects of love that become incorporated into becoming a great tennis player at all levels.
I agree. I often think of and quote, and I think, again, history, I talked about before how important it is. One of the lessons, you know, does history repeat itself? And there's good and bad in it, but to go all the way back to the Greeks, and, of course, one of my pet peeves is when I hear we're a democracy. We're not a democracy. Democracies don't work, and we're a republic, and I hate to hear people say that. But going back to the democracies and where you learn from it, Aristotle said educating the mind without educating the heart is no education at all. And that's why I say, you know, the PTR has a function, the USPTA has a function, the USTA has a function, but the person that I think can get the message across best is the coach. If the coach, you know, loves the teams, and to do that, you have to have a heart. You have to have a heart for the long hours. You have to have your family has to have a heart to understand that you're not going to be there at every minute, but the time you have, you're going to make sure that it's just as special with your family as it is with your team.
That's correct, and it's going to be quality time that you spend, not quantity.
Excellent. Yep, I couldn't agree more. Let me ask you a couple of questions, if I may.
Absolutely.
Training pros versus high school players. You spoke briefly a little while ago about, you know, not being able to sit there and the same principles as everybody on the team because, you know, they are different groups and they have different reasons why they're on your team. But you have those players. What's the big difference between training pros versus high school players?
Time and commitment. The player who has professional aspirations is really going about this in full time. It's a full-time commitment. It's a year-round marathon type approach. 100% committed. This is it. All, you know, when people talk about putting all the eggs in one basket, they're loaded into one basket. And you'll always in that particular level of or approach to the game, you're always going to have naysayers that say, well, it's not a good idea to put all your eggs in one basket. What happens if you get hurt? What happens if you don't make it? You know, those naysayers or doubters, if you will, they mean well. They really mean well. But, you know, people that are successful, their eggs in one basket, and they go for it. And the tennis, it just demands that, you know, if you have truly professional ambitions, and it has to start young. So, while there are exceptions where players starting later do turn professional, typically now the players that are turning, you know, when a person says, I want to be a professional, what they mean is, if you ask a youth, when they say they mean they want to be a professional, they really want to be that professional that you see on TV who are playing the Grand Slam, so who are in the top 128 players in the world. To get to that level, you have to start early, and you have to be really committed with your time and your focus to continue to reach goal after goal and to push yourself to those new levels.
Excellent. And it's and I think that athletes sometimes, unfortunately, we read and hear about that 10% and that don't manage it well or makes mistakes, and we forget sometimes they're young, and, you know, we all made mistakes when it's young, and some of us still make it. But it's hard. I wish we could do more to convince people that 95% of these people, the dedication they have and what they did to get to the level they did reach.
Well, I mentioned this before when we spoke on the air last time. Many of these players and families who are going for the professional ranking, if something goes awry where there is an injury or a series of injuries or maybe loss of funding or, you know, maybe just the player doesn't want to work that hard after a certain number of years, many times their consolation prize is a full scholarship to a top Division I school. And what's of interest is that those players actually feel like they have failed when they get a full scholarship to Duke or to Stanford because they didn't make that 128 players that are playing at the U.S. Open. Isn't that amazing?
That is amazing. And it's just, it is one of the challenges of coaching is to have players realize what they've accomplished and not to measure success by wins and losses, but I guess it's easier on the high school level to sit there and, the phrase I've often used, don't look at the match as winning and losing. Look at the match as did you come out ahead in the score or did you come out behind in the score? Because if you came out behind in the score, but you could sit down after and be truthful with yourself, and what me as a coach afterwards, and tell me why that happened, and you could sit there and digest it that yourself, you really didn't lose. You know, it's part of the learning process that's going on. Hopefully your journey that you're on is going to take you where you want to go to college or beyond. But if you don't reach there, that road, although it's bumpy, goes to a lot of beautiful places.
It sure does. And, you know, I think perhaps we've all experienced that maybe we've set off in one direction and we may have accomplished a number of things in the direction that we originally set out with, but we may have ended up in a different place. So a good example in my own life was I wanted to be a professional tennis player, just like many of the juniors out there right now. And I was working towards that goal. But at 22 years old, as I was out on the practice court in Spokane, Washington, and Boris Becker was winning Wimbledon at 17 and a half, it really hit me that I probably wasn't going to go to Wimbledon as a professional player. And so at that moment, what I decided was I'm going to get into coaching this game. I'm going to continue to play. I'm going to continue to work on my game as a professional or an aspiring professional with the goal being that I'm going to then take those skills and experiences from playing out in tournaments and traveling and, you know, really doing it on my own, and I'm going to apply it to my coaching to help upcoming players. And as God would work everything, 10 years later, I was working with Boris Becker and his team over in Germany when Nick Bollettieri was coaching him.
No, that's fantastic the way the Almighty works. There's no two ways about it. Is that where you met Tommy Haas over there or through Bollettieri over here? Or how did that happen?
That was over here at Nick Bollettieri's. I was working with a young boy called Greg Hill from North Carolina, who, again, had professional aspirations, got ranked 600 in the world, had wins throughout the juniors over the Bryan brothers in singles and in doubles, and was Tommy's doubles partner. So he had great aspirations. He unfortunately had an accident while training here at Everett's in South Florida, where he did a backward sprint, and he fell and broke his elbow. And, his consolation was he got a full scholarship to UNC, played there for a year, did not enjoy it particularly, struggled, and he was honestly struggling with himself, but also with the coach. And we ended up I ended up calling Dick Leach on his behalf, and he ended up going to USC, graduating from their business school, and in 2013 was named Father of the Year up in Orlando, and is now an extremely successful businessman at the ripe old age of 39 now. So, amazing. Just amazing.
Yeah, that's right. We don't always know where that road's going to take us, but, you know, if we stay on it and keep progressing along, usually that journey is, in most cases, a good journey.
That's right. It will have its challenges for every one of us, and all the listeners included. You know, we all have our own separate challenges, both on and off the court, that we have to continue to strive to overcome. But that's part of becoming great. And that's one of the things I've always admired about Tommy, is after meeting him at Paul Terry's and training with him, and just through all the challenges that he's faced, you know, with both ankle surgeries, three times shoulder surgery, voted twice comeback player of the year on the ATP Tour. He just loves to compete. One of the most competitive human being I've ever met, in a good way, but on the court, he's out there to win, and still loves that. So it's just it's an incredible and just an amazing opportunity to have that time with him from the age of 11.
And that is pretty amazing, and he's quite a gentleman. You know, not too long ago, I read Tony Dungy's book on Common again, because I just, and I don't know if it's my age or just not being up on things enough, but there seemed to be a difference in commitment years ago and wanting to compete, and today some of the young people just expecting this. This is what, you know, I should get. And, you know, we could argue, is that their fault? Is their parents' fault for, you know, giving in or anything? Is it the fault of the idea of an authority figure? And, you know, the other thing that amazed me is that you were so young at that time when you first started coaching with him. And I think of, you know, in Tony's book, he talks about, and loving history, going back to how important an authority figure is. And he goes all the way back to you must respect the authority, and speaks of Romans 13, 1 and 2, where everyone, and he sits there and he's quoting Paul in the early church, when he says, everyone must submit to a governing authority, for all authority comes from God, and those in a position of authority have been placed there by God. So anyone who rebels against authority is rebelling against what God has installed, and they will be punished. And I've read that phrase many times, and I've talked about it, and then sometimes people have reminded me, well, how about the person that isn't a good authority and misuses that authority? But I just question myself today why there seems to be a rebellion against authority figures. Any insight on that?
Oh, it's the workings of, you know, just how we're designed, unfortunately. We, you know, our own flesh is very hard to, does not want to be controlled, does not want to be told what to do. I mean, let's be honest, when we see our children and even our animals, we just got a new puppy recently, and when, you know, we watch the innocence of these newborns and how they act, my new puppy is constantly now trying to push my 8-year-old dog out of the way to take her food. So yep. our natural instinct in our flesh is to do what we want and how we want to do it. And so the thought, you know, that we have to follow rules, or maybe we have to work really, really hard. Honestly, the flesh doesn't want to work hard a lot of days, and especially when we're training players. You know, it's a key for us to know that. So we can help players to work through that, and that takes a variety of different tactics on our part to do that. But that is, and many people don't understand, you know, God's authority and the structure, how he put things together to begin with. So they don't understand that first and foremost, we are to love the Lord our God, and with all our heart, mind, and soul. The second part of that is to love one another. So within, from God, then it goes to our family structure. Unfortunately, in today's world, there are many lack-a-dads or dads that are not available, which has just a tremendous detrimental effect on a family. But nonetheless, I commend the single moms. I just think that they are probably some of the strongest human beings on the planet for all that they get done and what they do for their families and sacrifice in spite of not having a male role model that their children can look up to. But fortunately, God's planned for that. So he knows that, look, if your earthly father is not doing a great job of leading you, you know, he has provided us with the ultimate coach, in my opinion, which is, you know, the God-son, which is Jesus Christ, as a role model. And again, you know, I know last time we spoke on some of these points, you know, people, some of them defaulted to, well, this isn't a religious show. No, what you and I commonly talk about when we speak with one another is what is, we put tennis into a broader picture of, what is the big picture here? Tennis fit into the bigger picture of my life. And what am I doing this for? You know, these are key things for us as coaches to know. Are we coaching for our own selfish ambitions? Well, quite honestly, many of us are, right? Mm-hmm. There are different stages as coaches where we just feel like we have to prove ourselves. And we've got to prove ourselves we're producing great teams or great players. Are we taking more of a servant leader approach where we're truly there serving and leading? I think as we become more wise as coaches and spend more time with it, I do think that we move towards that. Because we know it's not about the money, that's for sure. You know, it's not about the financial piece.
Right.
And even on the pro tour, we are one of the weakest links in the entire professional tennis tour. Because how many sports do you have the player working? Too many. Not too many. So if a player's out there on the practice
court. I agree,
and
sometimes I agree 100%, but sometimes I wonder if some of that is in our fault because, do we give up? Going back, you go Exodus 20:12 says, honor your father and mother, then you will live a long, full life in the land of the Lord your God has given you. Now, as a coach to me, you've got to be a father figure because if you really love those people and care for them, that's what you have to sit there and do. And I sit there and talk to some coaches, and if you remember in Florida Tennis Magazine, one of the articles was about getting involved in the social media. And I don't know how many coaches says, oh, that could be such a problem, and I don't want to know, and it's better, you know, they're going to do what they want. Is that what a father would do? Is that what, and as you as a coach, are you really just more concerned with if a person has a good forehand or a good backhand or developing a player that's going to contribute in society?
That's correct.
I struggle with that sometimes. Help me out, Scott.
Yeah. Well, I know as a coach already, John, that you do care first and foremost about the person and that, you know, to continue with the authority, we have God, then we have our parents, and of course we have our government. We have our job. So for the listeners, you know, we have a boss, and we are to answer to their authority. And as you noted, sometimes you may disagree with that authority, and especially if it's not in line, say if the corporation's views or the school's philosophy is not in line with your own personal views. And I've experienced that as a coach as well, where my school's philosophy changed from when I started. And what I was faced with was a real conflict between how I personally coach and the reason I feel what my purpose for coaching is versus what the school felt was best for retaining funds in the school. And that's a real challenge for us as coaches. And, you know, it's we can be a shining light amidst poor authority if we're surrounded by it. We can actually be a leader and possibly even help our authority figures that we work with because they see something different in us when we're out on the court or when we're handling parents or we're handling problems. But in many cases, sometimes you have to make a decision as to what is the best thing for you, your family, and as well as what your what you feel your purpose to do in your life, and that may take you in a different direction.
Well, you know, thank you for bringing that up. It was something I wasn't, and I should have mentioned earlier that you are the FCA tennis director at the King's Academy, and you know, that's one of the reasons, but I think that we have to sit there and, you know, take those, when that happens, those are tough decisions. And I would just, like you know, and the opposite of courage in our society is not cowardice, it is conformity. And that Ooh. Can be a problem sometimes, you know. Yes, we want to conform to be to part of the norms of society if society is good. But when you see the norms of society not reflecting what that society was built on, it isn't a question of going out and yelling and screaming about it. Is you have to participate and be part of it. I mean, I shouldn't say be part of it, but be part of looking to change it.
That's right. That's right. And as you know, as coaches, it's a very tough line that we walk, because we know those things that we feel will help the team the most, and in many cases, you'll have, being that we're dealing with an individual sport, you'll have individuals, players and or family members that may not be in agreement with what your vision and mission is, but yet they're on your team. So that's always a big challenge. And I think, again, it's very important to identify, to know at the beginning, you mentioned strengths and weaknesses, to identify what are the parents' visions and mission statements, if they have them, for, you know, these more dedicated players, as well as your recreational families who, quite honestly, maybe due to lack of information or wisdom, have unrealistic expectations as to what their son or daughter should be doing on the team.
Well, I couldn't agree more. I think communication between players, coaches, and parents is just so important. And when I was coaching the high school, I know the season started in January, but we started in September. I mean, everybody knew that the first Wednesday in September, October, November was player-parents meetings. And we sat there and explained the thing, as you know, and because we've discussed before, signing up and having them understand the different people on the team and making sure that they understood what they should expect from us, and also what we expected of them. I know I was criticized many times for having have him sign a contract, and they said, well, he's not really running a no-cut program because, you know, he had one of the things in his contract, if the grades go down, he needs the parent and the teacher to explain why you should be on the team. Otherwise, he was going to drop you until your grades were up. Well, in my belief, right or wrong, was if the person is cutting themselves, and it doesn't make them a lesser person, but it's a person that's not conforming to the norms of this small society we're trying to build as a team.
That's a wonderful point. And, you know, my previous AD moved away from doing player-parent contracts, but then I think started reinstating them in other sports, and I do think that's a very valuable thing to have, laying out what the expectations are, both for the parent and the player, and, of course, what you will be providing. And I also like to add on my player-parent contract what my criteria is for captains, so they can see that up front as to, well, how did I select my captains, and why did I select the captains that I did? It wasn't a popularity contest by no stretch.
Excellent point. Would you like to go into that a little? Because I think that is something. I think some people, again, with the entitlement society, well, I've been on the team for 3 years, so I'm entitled to be captain my senior year. And other people look at, I'm the best player on the team, so therefore I should be the captain. And there's a difference between being a captain and being a leader. And you can be a leader without being the captain, but if you're a leader early enough, at some point you'll probably be a captain. Would you like to explain what your process was and is?
Absolutely. Well, first of all, you mentioned Tony Dungy, and I can't recommend that book enough. He's got a number of them. Quiet Strength was one I read in 2011, and that was the first year that my girls' team won the state championship after 16 years. And, of course, we had to beat American Heritage Del Rey to do that, which was, at that time, I think they had won maybe 14 state championships. Mm-hmm. So they were in our district. It was amazing. And it was the beginning of just an amazing, you know, 7 years after that, at least, or 5 years at least. And it was just incredible. And by the way, Tony will be speaking down in Miami in the next couple of weeks, just so for all the listeners, if you want to come down. Yep, he's going to be speaking at the Fellowship of Christian Athletes Prayer Breakfast down in Miami. And I can post something about that on. I'll get the date, and I'll be happy to post that for our listeners on FHSCTA, so you guys can come down. If any of the listeners would like to come, I'd be more than happy to get us a table, and it's just wonderful because he's just an amazing speaker. And as I said, he's written a number of books, one of which I felt impacted me as a coach greatly. And so the tie-in here is in the question was, well, what was your criteria for your captains? And first of all, my first criteria was this. If you're the captain, then you are the foundation that every other part of our program is built upon. Now, I say that in a physical sense. For me, personally, God and following the examples of Jesus Christ, for me personally, are the foundations of everything that I do. And that's not to say I go out and try to evangelize everybody that's on my team or anything like that. It's not about that. But as a representative of Christ, I have to act in a certain way because I want to. Not because I have to, but I really want to because it's so satisfying and it's just so enriching in my life. So I don't make any secrets about that up front. But yet I embrace everybody who's out on those courts with me. And like you said, it's a family, it's a love, and it's an expression of that. But with my captains, I really held them to the standard of there had to be a year-round appearance, not just a season-only appearance. And what I expected my captains to do was to mentor every person on the varsity, every person on the JV, every person in middle school, and I wanted to come in and have an impact a couple times a year with my lower schoolers as well. So that was a lot of responsibility. So, for example, my captains, and they could be nominated as a captain from their freshman year all the way through their senior year, depending on how they showed that. So I had my youngest captains, I believe, were probably sophomores that I started with, and that was wonderful because then I had, you know, 3 years with them, and they really did an amazing job of handling a variety of things for the team. Logistically, handling issues, bringing issues to me on behalf of the players. But as mentors, I always expected them to be the role model. I would entrust them to do the dynamic warm-ups. I would entrust them to get things like shirt sizes and skirt sizes and help me with uniform design when we did that. I look for them in the summertime to come out. Didn't have to be the whole summer, but for a week or whatever they could do. And I would, as they became juniors and seniors, I would compensate them for that. But in their freshman, sophomore years, a lot of time I was mentoring them myself as to what I wanted them to do as captains. With the lower schoolers, I loved them coming down and hitting with my lower school groups in the fall, especially, and making one or two appearances in, you know, a three-month period between September and November. I love them doing the same thing with my middle school group. And so after high school season, I would have my captains come back and speak to those middle schoolers and hit with them to demonstrate, you know, and to share, this is what it could be. And what was amazing is, as I started recognizing my different captains and putting their names on the fence and things, those young little minds would be sitting there watching them, watching every move they made. And, you know, we would be open. I would ask my captains in front of my players, what do you feel your strengths are? What do you feel your weaknesses are? What were your best moments in high school tennis? What were some of the ones that you were kind of embarrassed about? And the younger students would listen to that, and they would aspire to be like them. So it was, as I say, a year-round appearance, not just a season only, and truly that they were there to serve the team, not to be served by the team. Huge difference.
I think that's just such an excellent point, Scott. Thank you for sharing that, because, you know, gratitude is just so important. And at the PTR last week, Billie Jean King was honored because she was one of the original people that helped get the PTR started. And she said there that evening that she starts every day with a gratitude list. And I think we forget about that sometimes. And, you know, here we would we were blessed to have her sharing the night with us. And she's telling us how blessed she was and how grateful she was to be there. And I think that's why I enjoy talking with you so much, because, you know, we all need inspiration at sometimes, and you're inspiration to me sometimes. So I appreciate that, and go ahead, I'm sorry.
No, I find you're a great inspiration also, and what I love when I read your articles in Florida Tennis and even hear you speak with groups is you're not afraid to go to some of the hot spots, right? And you do it in a loving way, but even after our last conversation we had, where, again, some of the listeners, you know, were kind of bringing up some of the points that we had made, and I thought you did a wonderful job of really putting their comments into a bigger picture as to why we were drawing from scripture, a source of wisdom. For me, something that's been around for 2,000 years that's worked so effectively for millions of people all around the world is a wonderful source to go to and to know. You know, King Solomon, who was one of the greatest kings of all time, when he spoke to God and God said, what do you want? You've pleased me so greatly with everything you've done in my honor. What do you want? And he responded, I want wisdom. Wow. That's an amazing answer. It wasn't more money. It wasn't more titles. It wasn't more, definitely wasn't more women, because that eventually got him into big trouble.
Right.
Yeah. He wasn't asking for more wives, even though he had 750 at one point. But that was his undoing, you know. It's just amazing. So I think that's one of the things I've always admired about you is there are areas of wisdom, and you're not afraid to go into those to become a great coach, which you already are. And that's why you're a great coach, because I remember when I was out traveling on the tour, I was turning over every single stone I possibly could to discover what is it that's going to give my players an edge. And hence why, you know, two books came out of that, a DVD. I mean, it's just, you know, and I learned so much more than I could ever put in those books and things. But, you know, those are points that you want to share. And that's, again, by being a part of your organization, one of the greatest benefits is that annual get together of all the coaches. I learned so much this year myself, as you've done every year as well. And that's why it's so important for our listeners to get out and really stay current and be involved with the organization.
Well, thank you. I agree. And I think that's one of the biggest things of is being able to continue learning. I think when you're teaching, there's great lessons to be learned from your students if you're willing to take the time and listen to them and hear what they're really saying. I don't think listening is one of our strong suits in our society anymore. We have too many other activities. Speaking of people, and the other thing is, I think the important thing, and I've reminded young coaches, go to an experienced coach and ask for help. Usually the better coaches are willing to share, and I thank you for sharing. And this is, and hopefully people are reading your books and taking the lessons you learn and that you were willing to share instead of trying to hold it in as a secret. One of the other things that I'm sorry, I'm just going to say one of the other things that the PTR, listening to Jim Lair's talk, and he talked about the role of kindness in coaching. And I couldn't help, and I mentioned you because I think the way you approach coaching was so important. And you know, the importance of winning character. And those were some of the, I think if you look beyond some of the unfortunate violence in the 13 hours, those are some of the important lessons that were taken out of there. And I think sometimes people, you know, don't equate, they do equate kindness with weakness. And
yes,
one of the things that Jim Lehrer pointed out, and I just sat there and blew my mind, I was an admirer of him, but I didn't realize, Rear Admiral Ray Smith, now retired, the U.S. Navy trainer of the SEALs, and his approach to coaching, and that's where we got in the conversation about you and your approach and what you've introduced to the tennis team coaching prospect. He reduced the washout rate by 30%. And yeah, he didn't share and cut out any of the training. You had to do the exact same things when he took over the program. And I think back to when I was in the Marine Corps and the people in boot camp, and the washout rate was so great. And I've often thought, I've talked to young Marines, and they say, oh, you guys were so much tougher than us. No, we weren't. No, we weren't. We're blessed to have you and what you're able to do. There's just a better way of learning. And here's a guy that sits there at 72 years old and 200 pounds, would sit there and do 200 pull-ups. So he was as tough as nails and as tough as everybody else. But the biggest difference he did with the Navy SEAL program is rather than tell somebody, you know, I could see it in your eyes, you're not going to make it. And God, I heard that in the Marine Corps, I don't know how many times. You know, you might as well quit now. his position was, listen, this is tough, but you can do this. You can do
yes.
it. I have confidence in you, and I know you can do it. So I think sometimes in our vocabulary, we forget about kindness, and that's why I look forward always to having you on our program more often, is because I think it's part of, it should be part of who we are, and why be afraid to sit there and let people know who we are?
That's great. That's correct, and who we represent. Because, you know, oftentimes Christ was viewed as being meek, but he was never weak, and there's a huge difference. He displayed meekness, which people, again, in this world view as weakness. Because why? He taught us to turn the other cheek, or he taught us things that were very contrary to what our flesh really wanted to do. Like, for example, forgiving your enemies. Wow, that's a big one. Forgive them.
Right.
Wow. Well, my goodness, you know, we all have that opportunity to forgive our enemies. And those enemies can be very close to us. They can be in our own families at times, you know, and sometimes you got to forgive them. You got to really just forgive them and move on. And so it is a very interesting point you make. And I have found, you know, I've met parents who come up and quite honestly, you know, we were all wired a little differently, but people hear that I'm soft-spoken, I'm actually laughing, I'm enjoying the practice. And what they don't realize is that it's been that very approach. Don't get me wrong, was fully committed and being very consistent, as I shared at the opening of the show, with how we're going about the training and what we're doing, but it to be in a way that's burning the player out. Because too often what the world thinks is the best way of form of training is actually the quickest recipe for that player to find a way out. And that way out is generally an injury. I could have made it as a pro, but I didn't because, you know what, I got injured.
Right.
You know, and the players look for that. They're very smart. If they feel that it, you know, they don't understand what the bigger picture is, they don't feel that support, or they're just tired of being pushed perhaps in the wrong way for too long, they'll exit. They will get out of it. Believe me. And that's something we never want to do. We just don't want to see players leaving the game. And we know it's inevitable sometimes, but as coaches, we want to set them up to be successful. And that's one of the questions I put on the exam this year. Do we give all our students at the beginning of the season all the answers for what you want them to know by the end of the season? And my answer is yes, we do. We want them, and you go, well, wait a minute, shouldn't they find out themselves and dig for the answers instead of you just giving the answer? You want to set, as we talked about with plan, you want to set what the goals are for the team and where you want to see the team, and from a performance standpoint and what you envision them having from an outcome standpoint. So typical opening of the season might be, team, over here, it's your season. It's not my season. What you put into it, you're going to get out of it. Let's go for the state championships. That's a great goal. And here are the performance objectives that we want to work on this year and that I want to see you as a team improve on between now and districts. And everything between now and districts is just practice, tough matches, but it's all just getting you ready for your first exam. And your first exam comes the first day of districts. Your second one will come at regionals, and then your third and final test will come at states. Oh, man. You know, which player isn't excited to hear that? Especially coming from an academic background will go, well, that's a great plan. I can do that. We can do that. Let's do it.
Fantastic, and that's so important. I'm in the middle right now of another book, Students Learning Support, and I'm struggling truthfully with it. I see a whole bunch of statistics, but it doesn't appear to be telling us what the educators should do. It tells us we have the kids come from different environments, that broken homes are problems, language not being understood is a problem, But the thing that's missing to me, and I'm just about through with it, but I just don't think it's all going to come in the last two chapters. I might be wrong, but it doesn't say, you know, what should we do? It doesn't say how to go out and tell the student what's expected of them. It seems like we're afraid to do that sometimes. We're afraid to sit there and say, you know, it's not, and you don't have to say it in a way that this is what expected of you, but this is the opportunities in front of you. And this is, buy into it. This is what the journey is going to be, and this is what we're going to have to do in order to reach these steps. And we're going to, and the good thing is we're going to recognize along the way if we're on, if that road is taking us to where we want to go.
That's correct. And some of the listeners out there are going, oh, you don't understand. My team hasn't even come close to winning a district title. No problem. You know, you identify with, well, what have your previous seasons looked like? Which schools have been, you know, rival schools for you? And which ones, you know, and then start to, from a performance standpoint, pick maybe that rival school and say, hey, you know what, this year let's work really hard to see if we can do solidify our doubles so that 4-3 match we lost the last 2 years to the same team, maybe we can switch that and get it to go our way this year if we work on our doubles. It could be your whole season right there, getting that win over that rival team that you haven't been able to beat the last 3 years, 2 years. So, you know, it's all relative to where you are, the number of players you have in the program, you know, so many factors. But they're all factors that if you, again, assess what your strengths and weaknesses are with your existing teams, you can set and plan for, you know, success.
No question about it. And sometimes, and this is where you talk about making adjustments, sometimes you're go in there. I remember my first year and the schedule was already made. It wasn't a schedule I made because it was a very tough schedule and a team that were all recreational players on it. And how did you rebuild success from that? We built it. We weren't able to measure wins and losses, but we still measured. What I did is I measured time on the court, how much time you spent in the match. And now all of a sudden, because you're getting beat, you know, it might be 6-0, 6-0 two times or three times in a row, and you say, coach, I'm not going nowhere. So, oh, wait a minute. Remember how long were you on the court the first time? Now you're being, you know, you're on the court longer. They're, you know, they're still beating you. And then all of a sudden there's a couple wins that comes out of it, and then that, a couple games, and then all of a sudden there's a couple wins. Sometimes it's a long and tough journey, but if you believe in what you're doing and you're willing to share it, you're going to get people buying into it. And that's what we're trying to do with our tennis team coaching philosophy is that your team has made you – most teams, there's a dozen teams in the state that are powerhouses year after year after year, but usually it's because of a culture that was built up there, and that's hard to do, and it takes time to do it. So until that's done, you know, we're trying to just make that learning experience a little easier than it was for us, that's all.
That's correct. Yep, that's 100% correct.
Well, we've gone over an hour, but that's all right. Is there anything, there's a few things I have to cover. Do you have any thoughts that you would like to give out or maybe even what you would like our next conversation to be a few months from now?
Well, again, you know, I thank all the people who make this show such a great success, and I thank you, John. If any of the listeners ever want to reach out and email me at scott@scottstennis.com, more than welcome to. That's Scott at scottstennis.com. And I'm happy to answer any questions or, you know, if there's anything we covered tonight that just didn't seem maybe to answer what you had on your mind, then feel free to reach out to me. I'm happy to help any way I can. And continue to support Florida High School Coaches Tennis Association and be involved. And let's keep pushing forwards and making the high school tennis what it truly can be, and you know, what it can be, help players to become in the future.
Well, thank you, Scott, and thank you for all you do. It is appreciated. And those of you that have been listening to the broadcast for the last year, now we've been on a little over a year. It's amazing how far we've come in a short amount of time. But those of you that haven't heard Scott before, and I know you hear me mention him time to time on the show, I think you'll appreciate now a little bit more what a great coach he is. If you haven't read it in any of his books, go out and get it. Not just because the Human Kinetic publication is going to get you points on the tennis team coaching certification program, but they're important books. I think you'll find that the books that we have on there are books that you great lessons in there. And that's what we try to do, is share. Like I said, we're trying to speed up the learning process. It is difficult. It was difficult for me some times. But the Almighty works in strange ways, and I'm and appreciative of that. Those of you that want help, many of the outstanding coaches that we have on will tell you, contact me at this here place. I sit there and tell people, if you want to be participation, we all need help at some times. You know, the first place to look for help, in my opinion, is in the scriptures. I talk to the Lord every single day. But then the other place after that to look is to look towards a coach that you respect and a coach that's been doing this for a while. Most of the time, those coaches will sit there and give you assistance. So when somebody like Coach Williams comes out and he says, here's my email, this is how to contact me, it's because he truly cares. He cares for the Florida High School Tennis Coaches Association. He cares for what we're doing. But he cares for his team, but he also cares for you. He loves you, too. And he's out there, and he's willing to help you. I would like to remind you that the month of March, we have some outstanding shows coming on. The month of March actually starts off with former boss of mine, actually, Michael Stutzke, athletic director, another person part of our high school tennis coaches certification program, another person that going out and give. It was a pleasure working for him for 20 years because he really cared about the athletes. The athletes were first in all those things that we did. And when you're on the same agenda, that makes it good. Bobby Klonetic, the next week, the president of the Texas Coaches High School Tennis Coaches Association, a great gentleman, former college coach, high school coach, president of the association. Texas are doing a lot of things that I'd like us to do. Hopefully when we grow up, we'll be just like him. Ed Cross will be also in March. In April, we have some exciting people coming on, too. Matter of fact, I told you how in Hill and Head I went through my continuing education with USTA High Performance Coaching, and Paul Luberzer, who is the director of that, does an outstanding job. We'll be on in April. And those of you that know Andy Brandy and his schedule as a senior coach with that program, the former coach at the University of Florida, all kinds of awards, he'll be on in May. So I think we have some exciting shows coming up. We look forward to talking with you. Please tell your friends to listen in. And again, I will remind you that it is not too early to nominate people for the All-Star Tournament. Following the FHSAA Tournament will be the High School All-Star Tournament. We will return to Winter Park. Beautiful facility there. You'll have a great time. And remember, for a $25 fee, you can nominate your high school senior to be on the team. And when we say on the team, might not be picked to be one of the people that travel from each region there, but they'll still be recognized on there. And we are a 501c3 not-for-profit organization, so that fee is tax-deductible. And we, like any not-for-profit organization, we need financial assistance to do the things we are doing. And truthfully, we would like to expand to the other portions of that there. We have to thank Wilson Sports again, 100 years of producing Wilson products for all sports. They will again be supporting us at the All-Star event. They'll be passing out goodie items that will be given into the Dean Street Insurance a backpack that the players and coaches will receive. And, of course, we will be using the Wilson tennis ball there. And you know those players and coaches are going to look good because they'll be all dressed by our FHSTCA clothier, and that is Team Connection. So if you need team uniforms or club uniforms or special items, Team Connection is the place to go. And like I said, if you haven't seen this issue of Florida Tennis yet, or it's been no longer exists at your club, somebody has gone off with it, remember you can always read the last issue on our website. Just go to www.fhstca.org and go to the link and you will see Florida Tennis there. And of course, when you go to press releases, you will also find the articles that I write each issue there. So you have a blessed weekend. Have a great week. Tell your friends to join us next week. And I think it's going to be another special show because there's another special person that's going to be on the show. So thanks for listening, and I look forward to talking with you next week. Have a blessed week now. Bye-bye.